ready to laugh your ass off.
I'm ashamed God made me a man.
I don't think God's doing a lot of bragging about it either.
What's happening, Captain?
We gotta come into that ending a little better.
That's like hitting a brick wall.
I know.
Hello! Happy New Year! It's first show back in 2016. So happy to be here. This is Denise. You're listening to The Lesbian Lounge from MyLesbianRadio.com. Plenty of ways to find us. Maybe you've stumbled on us through iTunes or maybe Podbean or the free listening app that's all the rage called Stitcher. However, you found us. Welcome, welcome. Maybe it's 3 p.m. Eastern and we're streaming right out of rainbowradio.fm on a Wednesday afternoon. Could be. Not sure. However, though, welcome aboard. My name is Denise. I am an American lesbian living in London, and I bring you the Lesbian Lounge. So happy 2016. Like I said, first show back. I couldn't be more pleased to kick off the new year in such a way. I've got two fantastic interviews. First one is with the screenplay writer Phyllis Nagy, who you guys, I'm sure you've heard the name. I'm sure you're well aware of the film Carol. Phyllis, right now, high demand, so it was incredible to score an interview right now with Phyllis. I just read this morning, BAFTA nominated. I mean, come on. We got Oscar buzz. We've got Golden Globe nominations. And I have actually managed to speak with Phyllis. So this is huge. Big way to kick off 2016. I also had the chance of speaking with Bridget McManus. You guys hear me talking all the time about telofilms.com. And Bridget has written and is starring in a brand new six-part web series called Maybelle. And it is available on telofilms.com. Sweet, sweet story. We're up to episode 4. And I am utterly addicted. Can't even tell you. So this is a really great way to kick off 2016. I got no complaints so far. We're 8 days in. I've got nothing to complain about. holidays were fantastic. Really, really a fun time. Got together with friends. Had a good meal. Had plenty of Prosecco. All kinds of great presents. Can't say enough good things about Christmas. New Year's a little quieter. My wife is off to Australia, so it was a little quiet New Year's. But that's okay. It's all right. It's okay. She'll be back. I'm spending my time wisely. I must update you. I have finished my book. It's taken a year. my goal was to finish before Christmas, so a little late. But a little late hitting the mark, but you know what? It's done. It's okay. It's done. I don't know what to do next, but it's done. It's sitting here, and I play around with it, doing edits all the time. You know, whatevs. That's done. Starting a new one, got a new idea, fleshing it out, keeping busy. What more can I say? Still pet sitting for the neighbors, having a good time with that. You know, been to the movies, went to see Sisters. Absolutely adored it. I love, first of all, writer Paula Pell. I love Paula Pell. Can't say, I mean, there's nothing better than leaving a movie theater with this big grin plastered on your face from having a fantastic hour and a half. You know, I mean, that is the goal, really. That is the goal, and that is what happened. And so far, I got to say, 2016, great year for film. I've seen Carol right towards the end after Christmas, that I saw Sisters. I've got no complaints, and now, like I said, I'm completely addicted to Maybelle right here on my laptop. So I don't want to fuss around too much with what's going on, because we do that on a regular basis. I'm fine. Everything's good. I hope that your New Year and holiday season was fantastic. And let's get started. This is my chat with Phyllis Nege, who you'll find out I was saying her name wrong the entire time I was promoting this. But anyways, this is my chat with Phyllis Nege, the screenwriter for the multiple award-nominated film Carol.
I just want to let all my listeners know that we have the screenwriter for the hit film Carol. She graciously allowed us a little bit of time, so please welcome Phyllis Nege. How are you?
I'm fine. It's Nege, by the way.
Is it? Nege. Okay, excellent. Good to know.
That's okay.
I just, as a matter of fact, was watching a film clip from the film awards that were on January 2nd with Cate Blanchett, and I thought, oh, how fantastic this is. What timing.
Yeah.
You must be getting bombarded right now. The film is doing so well, and there's so much Oscar buzz, and it's just incredible. My wife and I saw it like 2 days after it opened here in the UK, and we just walked out with our jaws dropped. Like it was just what everybody was saying. I mean, there's no way you can emphasize what a beautiful film it is. And yet, you know, for people that don't know, you wrote the screenplay and it was based on, the novel by Patricia Highsmith called The Price of Salt. So give us a little idea of what it took for you to sit down and adapt that story into a screenplay that we're now all seeing.
Yeah, well, it's been an unusually long haul with this. Its birthplace was actually in London. Film 4 supported its development every step of the way.
Yeah.
but the actual work of it was daunting because and there is no pun intended when I say The Price of Salt, or Carol, as it was known when I adapted it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit of a broke-back novel it's got a very elusive and shifting first-person point of view, primarily through the eyes of Therese Delavette, one of the central characters.
Right.
And because she is in love with Carol and in lust with her for quite a while without possibly even knowing what that is,
right,
being able not to name it, you know,
yeah.
Her point of view and her reference points on the events of what's going on in the lives of those around her are a little bit tricky, as they always are when you're in love and you're single focused and tunnel visioned. There's also a double road trip in the novel, which presents a huge problem in terms of a dramatic adaptation. Therese is a person who seems just to want to be alone a lot of the time.
Right.
And so there's a huge section of the second part of the book where she is alone.
Yeah.
And she's getting over Carol on her own. And obviously that took a great deal of finessing in order to preserve the, Therese coming into her own without Carol, but yet doing it in a compressed way and in 2 hours of time and without hideous, hokey, novelistic narration.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the burden, I think, that when you're adapting something, that comes into play that people may not realize, you know, that you're not recreating something. You're trying to tell a story that a filmmaker is then again going to put his twist on it.
Right.
And, you know, it's such a fine line. Were you at all nervous about what would happen once the camera started rolling on this, or did you feel when you turned in that script that it was going to be the movie that it is?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this wasn't, it never was a studio wasn't, maybe 18 years ago, I was a screenwriter for hire, but by the time this came to the screen, I was not just a screenwriter for hire in that classic way that, you know.
You give it up, right?
You give it up. You never see another person. No, that's not what happened. Todd and I had a great relationship, a great collaboration. I was on set, and I watched it being made.
That's fantastic.
And I never once had any doubt that this was in the right hands. It's not just Todd. It's the cast and the crew and all the heads of department. I mean, there were some really formidable talents coming together to make this.
Yeah.
So it was exciting. It was exciting to be a part of it and to watch it unfold.
Yeah, and it's so unusual, isn't it, for that to, for someone that's written something to actually be able to be a part of it.
Well, I actually think that's not true. I think that a lot of the best work in cinema, whether it's studio work or not, writers aren't treated like disposable pieces of, you know, nuisance in the way. I think a lot of really good work comes from having writers involved in almost every single aspect of what's going on, and that includes post-production, watching cuts of the film.
Giving
feedback, etc. There was never any question on this that everyone was making the same film. I think that's something that sometimes is a problem.
Right.
You know, but, and it can lead to all sorts of awful things, but, in this case, everyone was on the same page.
Oh,
and
fantastic.
So it was a pleasure, really.
I feel like that's something
that all,
the viewer can actually see, you know, having read nothing negative about the process at all, not hearing about it, any kind of crap, so to speak, in the media, just the presentation of this film, sitting there watching it as a viewer, and maybe even if you know a little bit about what it takes to put a film together and whatnot, I think that's where everybody was swelling with pride. Like, what a fantastic project this was, because of how wonderful it turned out. I think the thing, you know, as far as, like, I don't want to speak for the community, but I think the thing that's rallied our support is that it's one of the few films that actually has the ending that we want to see for a change, and not, you know, I know, like, for myself, having never read The Price of Salt, I was going in not knowing anything other than what I had seen, you know, in the commercials and the advertisements for it. So I didn't know what to expect, and I liked that feeling. But because of so many films that are out there, I kept in my gut thinking, oh, please, God, don't let something happen to one of these characters. Oh, please, God, please just let this go, you know. And it really, I walked out of there, I felt so relieved that I felt I loved it more. Was that one of the things, like, you're thinking about when you're writing the screenplay? Like, obviously, you know, you're going in and you're adapting this novel, and it's a dramatic piece. But and the fact that it's set in 1952, right? 1950s, around there?
Yeah, the film is set slightly later than the novel.
Oh, okay. But still, you know, in a period where...
For all sorts of reasons.
Yeah.
Of course, the two things that are incredible about the book, I think Todd and I have a slight disagreement about the book. I think Pat Highsmith, she was a friend of mine.
Really?
She was a marvelous writer, and I don't think this is that marvelous a piece of work, and nor did she. But Todd, you know, thinks the book is great. I think it's great that the book can hold a multitude of opinions. I don't think it's bad by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
But it's problematic.
had seen when they were at their mediation, and kind of when she finally just stood up for herself and said, you know, this is who I need to be for the sake of our child, and more because we're not ugly people. You know, like, I just, that was just fantastic. It was really, really, really great. What were your, like, were you, was Kate Blanchett and Rooney Mara and Sarah Paulson, were they all attached to the project as you were writing, or did they come on board after they had read it?
No, I think after Kate came on board the earliest, she was on even before Todd was on. And then, of course, luckily, when Todd came, they'd already worked together.
Right.
And so, you know, that was always going to be fine. And Rudy came once Todd came. And then, of course, Sarah and all the rest of those roles were cast once the film went into pre-production.
When you were writing the screenplay, were you writing it with anybody in mind?
No. I don't like to do that because you're inevitably disappointed, but
right.
At least not with living people. I did have in mind for Carol always the Grace Kelly of Rear Window.
Oh,
that
wow.
Particular
yeah.
character.
Yes.
There's a lovely iciness to her that on the surface that hides this real dirty girl underneath the passionate one.
Yeah.
And I mean, she also, the look of her is just impeccable.
Mm-hmm.
One of those early 50s.
Yeah.
Hitchcock blonde, but Carol is a, you know, Hitchcock blonde with a heart and a soul.
Right.
And then for Therese, my only model was Pat Highsmith, whom, of course, I had the benefit of knowing, and I knew that Therese was really Pat's alter ego. So
that's wild. Did you, did you ever collaborate or consult with Pat on what you were doing, or did you try and keep that part of the relationship?
No, she was dead. She was dead by the time.
Oh, I'm sorry, I got it.
This project came to me. I'm not sure I would have done it had she been alive. I don't know.
That's big, but, yeah, it's big to live up to, isn't it?
She was very disapproving of most of the film adaptations of her work that she'd been alive to see.
Oh.
So, I don't know what she would have thought about this. I know she would have thought Kate Blanchett was hot, but I don't know.
As do we all.
I don't know what else.
You know. As do we all. Let's talk a little bit, a little bit about the actual process of it, because you guys had to put this together on quite a short schedule, is that true?
Yeah, 35 days. Yeah,
it's remarkable when you see the film to think that was all. that was necessary to make that piece of work. That was incredible.
35 days and under $12 million, I believe. So.
Oh, good Lord. That is fantastic. Mm. I won't keep you, Phyllis, but thank you so, so much for your time, and good luck through Oscar season. I'll be sitting here with my fingers crossed.
Thank you so much.
Thank
my
you.
My pleasure.
Have a great day.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Yeah. You can tell I was not only nervous, but just excited about speaking with Phyllis. Really, really a pivotal interview, actually, for my career. I was super, super thrilled to speak with her. Carol is, I think, still in theaters now, so if you get a chance to see it, by all means, rush out and see it. It is a fantastic film. You will not regret it. Everything you've heard and seen about it is so true. It's just a remarkable film, a beautiful, beautiful film, and something that we can be proud of, you know, as a community, as a lesbian community. We can be really proud of this film. So good luck to Phyllis, and let's turn our attentions now in a different direction, the lovely world of the internet, where I speak to you constantly about telefilms.com. They have a new web series that is up right now. I believe it is up to episode 4. It's called Maybelle. It was written and it is starring Bridget McManus. Written by Bridget, starring Bridget, produced by Bridget and Kristen Baker for Telefilms. 6 episodes coming your way. We're up to episode 4. Maybelle is just a fantastic piece. It's perfectly balanced with drama and cute and endearing moments. And I'm gonna speak with Bridget. You're gonna hear this interview. Lots of good stuff. I love the fact that Bridget will drop scoop to me and the Lesbian Lounge like nobody's business. So you get to know a little bit about what's coming up, a little bit how it'll end, and a little bit about the future of Maybelle. So let's have a listen to myself speaking with the incomparable Bridget McManus.
I've got Bridget McManus on the line, star of Maybelle, which is going on right now, the web series on telefilms.com. And I tell you guys, I think every week, if I'm not mistaken, to be sure that you have your premium membership. It's like giving up a latte a month, not a big deal, $4.99 a month, and then you have access to all the lesbian content that Telo puts out there. And I can't say enough good things about Maybelle. So welcome, Bridget McManus.
Yay, thank you. It's been so long since I've actually talked to you.
It really has been. I think the last time we did an interview, it was like super official because it was for She Magazine and it felt like really formal.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it felt like super, super formal. Now we can just like let our hair down, talk about our cats, talk about our girlfriends, talk about this web series. Now, I want to put it out there, your cat Yoko Ono is quickly becoming a Facebook sensation.
Oh, my God. I have a problem. My dad actually called me. So I have this cat, you know, we got her, my founder on the street. She was 8 years old, and she could fit in the palm of your hand, and she had a male gun, she was like the saddest little thing ever. And I have love and hate relations with cats, and I just saw them with the cat, and I can't stop looking. On Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. And so my dad actually called me and was like, you need to stop. It was like an intervention over the phone. He's like, we don't want to see any more pictures of Yoko Ono. And I'm like, you need to stop following me on Facebook, Dad. Like, the fact that she, I love her. She's my world. I will keep her a kidney. Whatever Yoko Ono needs, she can have.
She is life. So sweet, though, that face. How can you not? I know. I'm the same way. My mother tells me when I got home that her friends are more interested in the pictures of Bruce. They're, like, big fans of Bruce. And I'm like, really? That's weird. Not about me, but the cat. She's like, no, they're all about the cat. Yeah. It's amazing.
Maybe we should do a cat calendar. A cat calendar of Bruce and Yoko.
We totally should. We totally should.
I think I'm jumping. I'm about to get on the plane with a camera and come shoot a big photo of Fred and Bruce.
We totally should. Sometimes I'll just snap a picture of him and, like, not to brag or anything, but I'll be like, I don't even need a filter. This is a fantastic photo. He's very photogenic, as is Yoko, because I know, I follow you, so I know these cats are very photogenic.
I don't even need a filter.
I know, he did just give me a weird look when I said that. So we...
They know we're always talking about them.
It's so true. It's so true. And he gets very... I don't know if Yoko's the same way, but does he get annoyed when you're on the computer or the phone?
She's screaming at her, and I closed her. I locked her out of this room. I'm sitting in one room with my dog, one of my dogs, and she's out with the door closed, and I can see her paws, and she's just grunting and batting and screaming. I don't know if you probably can't hear her.
No, I can't.
She sounds like she's confused the way she's screaming at my door.
It's ridiculous. I babysit my next door neighbor's animals during the day. Like, I go over and I let the dog out and play with him. He's a little French, little fat French bulldog. And then they have a ragdoll. Yeah, and they have a ragdoll cat, a little girl named Lily, that's got kind of the grumpy cat markings and colorings, but big blue eyes. And when I leave, she meows, like she cries. I know, I'm such a sucker. I told my wife, like, one of these days you're going to come home and Lily's going to be living with us. It's just the way it is. So I just want you to prepare yourself. Cat napper. Oh, my God. So,
that is exciting to ask anybody. So, we have a raccoon that's visiting our porch and looking for food. And totally, I know I shouldn't do it, but I started feeding it, which you're not supposed to do. And then when I went to check on the raccoon, there's now a possum living on our porch. But raccoon has a possum living in our porch.
Oh my God.
Which should not be happening.
Oh my God. I get this. I relate to this. I feed pigeons and squirrels in my backyard just so I have a gang outside that my outdoor pets, I call them, every day without fail.
We're encouraging them.
We are.
Wrong.
It's terrible.
I know it's wrong, but it feels so right.
It does. Just, if not for anything, for the sheer pictures that we can take of them.
Exactly.
There's
like, what is living in our porch? I'm like, nothing. Go to bed. Nothing.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. That's why my mother, like, is the complete opposite. They had a raccoon that used to come, she lives in Florida, and he used to kind of scurry around by her pool. And so they had to bring their outdoor trash can in and start making all these changes, and she was so resentful. And not as resentful as the raccoon, because he took a dump in her sneakers outside. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So whatever you do, don't stop feeding that raccoon.
Oh my God. Seriously. Oh, now I'm scared. My wife's going to be so mad. She's like, stop feeding the raccoon.
Don't leave your shoes outside if you do stop, I guess, is the moral of that story. How funny.
Oh, God, I'm scared.
Oddly enough, not a sign of a kitty cat in Maybelle.
There is no kitty cat. You're right. We do have a dog, but there's no kitty cat.
Yeah, they're a bit asshole-ish when it comes to doing what you want them to do at the right time.
Yeah, they're like, I'm not interested in you. There's a dog, and we're making Maybelle on some feature film, which is going to have a more prominent dog. We're writing a bigger role for a dog in Maybelle, the movie.
Oh my goodness. I think you've got a perfect premise for the movie. Like, let me just say, I'm up to episode 4. I think I'm on target. Like, I'm on schedule, right?
Yes, you're on schedule. Okay. Yes, you are.
And how many episodes are there going to be in total?
There's 6 episodes. We started releasing on December 13th, and the way Pella works is every week they release a new episode. Remember back in the day, we actually have to wait for things, and everybody binge watches everything.
Yeah.
And Pella's kind of like the slow burn of you check in, you see what's going on, you can think about it, you know, like TV shows. Want to find out what's happening to different characters and the storyline, but you have to wait for it. So, but as soon as you release them all, you can binge watch them. So every Sunday, we're releasing new ones, 6 episodes. We're on episode 4 this Sunday, episode 5. Guest star my wonderful wife, Carmen.
Oh my!
And we have a dirty love scene in the back of the truck.
Excellent! Oh my God! Yeah. I love that you just dropped scoop right here. You just dropped scoop right here.
Yep.
Excellent.
Yep. I asked her if she wanted to be in the series, and she said yes, she wanted to be a scumbag, creepy lesbian. Okay. So I wrote a role for her, and it wasn't gross enough. So we kept reading through it. She's like, I really want to be like, kind of like a jerk, something that like grabs your boobs and pulls your hair and says some really douchey things. Okay. And you know what? She was amazing. It was Academy Award winning performance.
First of all, it's phenomenal that she could request that you mold and shape this certain character just for her. That is fantastic.
Whatever she wants.
Right?
That's what marriage is. It's whatever you want, baby, you can have. Whatever you want.
Oh, I'm telling you, I do follow you guys, and I crack up. What was the last thing that she's funny, man. She is fun. Last thing she put up was like, I can't believe you guys didn't like, more of you guys didn't like this, and it was some hideous picture. She just cracks me up. Like, her sense of humor kills me.
Yeah.
But that's, like, she's
a lot of fun in our house.
She has really contributed, though. She's done the music for the web series as well.
Yeah, she wrote the theme song for the series called Hummingbird, which is actually able to, people can download it if they want to. And she has, for the feature, she's working on a bunch of new songs, too. So you'll be hearing a lot more of Carmen's music in it, which is just great because it's supposed to be Southern country, you know, series takes place and stuff, takes place in Virginia. I wrote it to be in Virginia, so that's where Carmen's from and her family's from. And we visited Virginia so many times, we've been married. And I just love Virginia. I love the people, I love the pace, I love the atmosphere. atmosphere. The landscape is just gorgeous. And it's such a different world. You know, we live in cities, and so living in, like, Los Angeles or New York, it's very different than trying to go to the local gay bar, which is, like, one in the, you know, one of the small cities.
Right.
And it's like, you see the people that come in, and it's like, we're just, everyone's still trying to figure things out. Versus, like, last night I was at the Abbey, and everybody's screaming and dancing. And it's crazy, and you forget how spoiled we are when we live in a city and it's a big gay community, you know? So that's why I was so excited to shoot it and set it in Virginia. Like, it's just a different world when you're gay in a small town. So it was such a treat to be able to go. We actually shot it in Nashville, though, where our director lives. So
that's right. That's what I was going to ask. Where was it shot? Because I absolutely, like I told you, I love the scenery. I love the feel. I love that little house. I just adore it. Like, I absolutely fell in love with it. Even before it started, you know, the pictures and everything that I was seeing, I was like, I was like, I'm going to love this. Like, I know I'm going to love this because I love that whole, you know, after being in a big city, you know, living in Miami, Fort Lauderdale, living in London, you know, like when I go back home to tiny little Niagara Falls, New York, town of Niagara, it's such a different feel. And I realize how much I miss it. And, you know, it's I don't know. It's like big city, big problems, small town, not that many problems. You know, it's just such a simpler way of life.
Yeah.
I love it. So I am adoring it. I'm adoring like every little bit of it. And correct me if I'm wrong, but these episodes are just a tad bit longer than what we're used to, and I'm loving that. I'm loving that so much.
Yeah. When I did my Nick Manus plan documentary series, I had 2 seasons over there, which are also available on Telo, but season 2, there were like 29-minute episodes. They were like TV,
yes,
TV shows.
Right.
And so for this, you know, I just kind of wanted it. I mean, these are still 12-minute episodes, and a lot of stuff is like 5 minutes. You know,
yeah.
I feel like you need a little more complete story because I like a beginning, middle, and end for every episode. That's just me. And as a writer, there was a series, I really wanted to kind of just develop relationships and to be able to shoot it in like a remote place and have like everything kind of be slow and so focused. It's not about texting who or
right.
What are all the storylines. It's about just relationships, and that's when I'm watching movies as a viewer. I want relationships. I love stories. Like, it's been a dream to work on love stories because whenever I go and see a romantic comedy or whatever in a movie theater, it's always guys. You know, those guys,
yeah.
Girls, and whatever. It's always great.
Yeah.
Except for Carol, which I'm obsessed with. And every person should be obsessed with. Have you seen Carol?
Yes. So
yeah.
Good. So
and,
good.
But it, like, sets the standard where it's like, you can have a romantic series with two women that are, you know, their lives are complex, and it's not about, oh, I can't be gay or whatever. I mean, that's obviously an issue. But it's like, just being alive and being a human, being in a relationship is hard enough. So that's why I was like, I want the scenery and the setting to be its own character.
Yeah.
But I really want it to be about these two women that have their lives in different places, but yet they can't stop being pulled together because you really can't help but be so in love with. And these two are in love. You are soulmates in love.
It's so true. And, you know, I don't know about you, but, like, when I go see, and I'm like you, I do, like, a good romantic storyline, a good romantic, even, a rom-com I'll deal with, knowing that it's going to, you know, knowing that it's not going to be anything I can relate to because it's going to be guy-girl. But, like, when I watch something like a Gary Marshall film, like Mother's Day or New Year's Eve, where there's so many different storylines, and I end up anticipating how they're all going to intersect, and that ruins it for me because that's all I'm thinking about. So when you are so single-focused with your characters, I feel like, as a viewer, I'm far more interested. You know, I'm far more intrigued with the storyline. I don't have to worry about what's going on in the subplot and the second plot, you know, and how those things are going to meet somewhere. You know, it's like I can just really get into the characters and the story. And that's, I think, what I love the most about this. And when you say feature film, like, that means there's going to be something that's like an hour and 50 minutes long?
Yes, there is. It's I'm writing a feature, and we're aiming to shoot it this year, and it's going to be an adjustment to the story. It's not picking up where we left off. It's the story from the beginning, but it's a full feature film.
Oh, cool.
And I'm super excited. I'm really excited, actually.
That's actually really big news.
Like actual areolas.
Will it be on Telo, or will it be, like, will we shoot for, you know, indie theaters, or, I mean, what are we talking?
I'm shooting for a theatrical release. I'm shooting for theaters. That's the goal. The goal is to do bigger and better. I think that, you know, society keeps changing, and we need to see more gay films in theaters. So we'll see how big it goes. Hopefully it can get as big as I want it to be. But, yeah, so I'm trying to figure out how much to explore in their relationship. Because, you know, it's one thing to have it on a web series and tank top. You can kind of see the silhouette of a nipple.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, do people want, you know, sex scenes? Do they want, not, you know, like, who would be warmest color? Obviously, that's not happening. But,
right.
Like, what do people need? What's going to work on the story? Is it going to be a bigger, you know, scope? How far do I go?
What did you think? I felt completely satisfied with the sex scene in Carol. Like, what did you think of that?
I mean, yes, I was very satisfied.
And
it was beautiful. And that's what I was about. These two women connect. It's not like you need to be, like, fisting and...
Right,
yeah,
right?
You know, it's like, you know, even just waiting for the kiss, the first kiss, is in slow motion almost. Like, that's what I love in movies. Like, when characters connect and you can feel it and you want them, you're rooting for them, and you want them to get together... That longing. I mean, I'm such a sucker for that. So that's my skill was such a gift because I'm like, I met Fran Nichols, who's my co-star, who's like Della, my love interest. I met her on another film that I shot called Jewish about two lesbians that were engaged. One of them was Jewish and one of them wasn't. They were kind of struggling with the fact that their families were not from the same age of religion. And so it wasn't about the parents didn't want to get married because they're gay. They were like, what are we going to do about culturally, you know?
Yeah.
And so I just loved her, and she's like, she's an out actress, and she's been in a long term relationship for 9 years. So easy to be with, and she's such a good friend of mine. And so we spent a lot of time hugging and kissing on that set, and I was like, I need an actress that I can just stare at in bed. You know, it's like there's a lot of like lingering and kissing. It's like, what do you do? It's kind of awkward when you're casting that. And so that's why casting her was so important and special. And she's just beautiful. Like, she's so great at what she does. And I'm ecstatic that she's going to return for the feature film. I'm really, really happy.
Oh, fantastic. I do. I love her. Like, I think casting was, like, spot on for this. Because whoever that douchebag is that plays Buddy is fantastic.
Oh, yeah, great. He's gay. He's gay in real life. He's a gay actor. He wouldn't even know it, you know? He seems like such a mama's boy bitch. Oh, jerk. I love it.
Yeah. Yes. Like, for me to be able to say that douchebag, like, you know he's doing a good job, you know?
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. And like my friend John, John Keating, who is plays Della's husband, JW. Like, he really is just the sweetest guy, and he's kind of beaten down in the way that he, you know, that they've been married for many years, college sweethearts, and he knows about her relationship with women, and he's not mad at her or turned on by it. He's just like, I love you and I accept you, and I just feel bad for him. I've been in relationships where I've cared about someone more than they cared about me. And it's like, what do? Do you stay? Do you make do? Do you take as much love as they'll give you? And so his character is really heartbreaking. And it was so important to not write that he's a dick husband. And that's
yeah,
why he has to leave.
Exactly.
Like, wait. Did you leave him because she's gay or because he's just a dick? And it's like, no, he's not a dick. He's really nice. He's just gay and in love with a woman.
Yeah, it's super hard.
That's
like, that is exactly how it happened. I was married when I figured my shit out, and I had to tell my husband, and like, as opposed to being angry and upset, and he was more like, I imagine, like what you're describing, like, you know,
yeah.
I knew that it was, I mean, like, that's the worst thing I feeling in the world was I felt like I robbed him of the future that he was completely set on and committed to.
Yeah.
And that was such a difficult decision, and we're still like close, we're like best friends, like, can't, you know, we're constantly Facebooking, and he's the first person I see when I go home, and, you know, I absolutely understand that, you know, I mean, I think as far as, like, most people's story,
you always hear the worst. Like, you always hear about that rotten husband and that, you know, the guy that takes it horribly, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know.
Don't cry. We're gonna rape everybody.
Yeah.
Right. I'm so angry. And not that, I mean, things that happen. So, but I think that the world has changed so much. The fact that people are transitioning on television shows. It's just like, things are not black and white. Like, man, woman, good, bad. It has to be like this. But, you know, people are more accepting. And I think that's, you know, I think that's so good to show. It's like, sometimes, you know, it's a Southern guy who has a wife that he loves, like, is leaving him for a woman. He doesn't have to go after that woman with a shotgun. He
right.
Goes, oh, I'm really sad you're leaving me because I love you.
Right.
I mean, and that's what that's true. People are more complex than I think a lot of media shows.
Right,
you know? So
right.
I feel bad for J.W. and Della's husband. Not bad enough that I'm not going to kill his woman. But I feel bad for him.
I do. I know. I, you know, it's like, they don't have to be, you know, the brute that goes after the new, you know, the new girlfriend. They can just drink their feelings away, you know, just sink those feelings in the bottom of a bottle. And, I mean, maybe that was one of the things about Carol that I liked, is that I walked out of there with my jaw hanging open because it was the ending that as a lesbian, you wanted to see finally. And it wasn't on a...
Well, you know, my friend Trish, who runs AfterEllen.com, she watched the movie first, and she was like a press screening, and I asked her to tell me the ending. I was like, if it doesn't have a good ending, I don't want to see it. I asked her to tell me. She spoiled the ending for me. And I was like, okay, now I can see it. Because if it was going to be a sad ending, there was no way I was going to watch it.
Me too.
I don't want to see that anymore.
Me too.
Yeah.
I didn't know what to expect, and I know that for the most part of the film, I constantly wondered if something bad was going to happen to either one of the characters. So when I say I walked out of there pleasantly surprised, I am not joking. Like, I just kept shaking my head.
But
I can't.
Because I feel like that's people's shows. The people's shows, like, bad things happen.
That's what we're used to.
Women not being satisfied.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's not always the story.
It's not, you know.
When working with Kristen, she was like, let's talk about it. What are we having? What kind of ending are we having? Are we going to have it be fulfilling, or are we going to have it being where it's so realistic that it's the complications of life? It's like, you know, so we talk through everything. And I'm like, as an audience member, as a viewer, this is what I need.
Right, right. How hard is it to do that in 6 episodes, though? Like, was that a huge challenge?
I wrote the series and then I broke it up into 6 episodes. It just happened to be 6 episodes. So, some of the episodes are a little longer than others because it was kind of like where the appropriate breaks were. So I wrote the story. And as a writer, I'm the executive producer of Kristen from Telefilms, and I co-executive produced it. And so I'm always thinking as a producer. So I'm like, how do I make things, you know, the most cost effective, especially when you're doing a web series, you're paying your own money, you know?
Right.
How do I make it as efficient as possible? We're going to be shooting in Nashville. We need to have a certain amount of characters. How do we make it clear and concise? How do we get them all in one day? You know, so I'm kind of always editing, like, okay, we need this, we don't need this, we need this, we don't need this. And so I set up the series, and then when I broke it down, it was 6 episodes. So that's kind of how it was. Because I think McManus planned, maybe McManus on the season was 6 episodes too, but I like series, and they're 10 episodes. Like, I love a story to go on longer, but it seemed like for this web series, 6 kind of rounded it out really well. And then, of course, it's going to be a lot more in the feature film.
That is fantastic. Will we, I know when we were planning this meeting, I was saying I got to grab you before the finale. Will it be a cliffhanger that we have to wait for, or will it be a little wrap up?
What do you mean? What are you talking about? What do you mean? Like, cliffhanger for the movie, or do you mean the whole series is complete?
The whole series is just a standalone, so we don't have to wait for a season 2. We don't have
to.
Oh, excellent.
I'm not going to stick you around. It's done.
Oh.
One season, done. You could sleep after episode 6. I think you'll be satisfied.
Oh, God. That was just like, that was like a Hershey's kiss right there. I mean, seriously.
That doesn't work for me. I need things to be wrapped up in a bow. I don't want to wait for next season. I just don't. Like, who knows what could happen tomorrow? I'm just going to wait for next season.
I'm the same way. I'm like that with regular television, and I know that's the tried and true formula, you know, that's for years to end on a cliffhanger, and yet it still aggravates me every time I watch a show.
It annoys me.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I think more of it, it's because you're afraid it's going to get canceled. Like, I know that I didn't think like this until 1999, when I was completely addicted to the show Popular, that was Ryan Murphy's first show, right?
Popular.
And they ended on a big cliffhanger and then got canceled in the off season.
Yeah.
And we never figured out, and I was like, I will never go through that again. Yet here I am, every year, you know, like, is Castle going to get renewed?
Well, I know we just want to drag things out, but I just feel like sometimes, or, you know, it's like love back and forth and pull and push, but sometimes things evolve and change, you know, and so for me, I need to have a story run its course and then, you know, end, and you know, some stories are going to end a different way, but I want a satisfying ending. That's kind of
right.
I like it when Mr. Darcy shows up at the right time, says the right thing.
Right. Do you think being a writer, like, do you think that's where that comes from? Because I feel like everybody comes at their projects from a different angle. Like, a viewer comes at a project from a different angle. A writer comes at a project from a different angle. A director, a promoter, you know, an advertiser. Everybody has their reasons why they want something to be the way it is. And I feel like it's so rare that a writer and a viewer are on the same page, and I feel like that's that outstanding quality that you have, that you're bringing to other viewers that are, I don't know, like, I feel so relieved, you know, like I feel 100% relieved going into a Bridget McManus project, you know, like, I know I'm going to be entertained. No, seriously, like, I know I'm going to be entertained, I know it's going to be a quality project, you know, I know I'm going to have the feel goods. And from what you're saying, like, I'm really pleased that this is going to have a nice, neat little, you know, wrap up, and it's like a standalone project. Cause I do feel like as a viewer, there's so much content out there right now. Thanks to people like Tello, there is so much content that when something is on a break and the next season is being filmed and in post-production, you've moved on to something else, and you're lucky if you remember. Yeah. You know, so I worry about that, and I'm so happy that we're on the same page. I think a lot of viewers are going to be on your page.
Well, what I like about this series, and you know, and it's funny, and maybe, I guess I'm tooting my own horn, but I'm not intending to. When I watch the series, you know, I'm part of the edit and everything.
Yeah, you have to.
I forget that I'm in it, and I rewatch it because the series is so clean and short and sweet, six episodes in a certain length, whatever. Once they're all on, you can just binge watch them all in an hour, and it's like you're watching a film, and you hopefully you have a little bit of an emotional roller coaster. You saw episode 4, so you know what I'm talking about.
I know.
And more stuff can happen. You know, more stuff happens next week. This episode coming up with Carmen is a lot of fun. Like, it's such a, if you're watching the movie, you know, you're going to be like, actually heavy happens, even comedic relief. Really. So it's actually like some comedy. Like
a little levity. Yeah.
Series. Yeah. And so this is the kind of series where I think that it's better, less is more. You know, you want
sure.
people wanting more. I want to leave people going, I like these two people. I want to know what happens. So that way when I do the film and it has these storylines and things, they're excited by it. Not just like, whatever, what are these two bitches doing now?
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, because I have to be honest, like, I'm at that point, like, with Grey's Anatomy. Like, I don't even care about Cali in Arizona anymore, you know? Like, I don't want to feel like that about characters, but yet, here I am honestly saying, I don't care about Cali in Arizona anymore. It's all played out. It's all done, you know?
I mean, it's just a lot.
Yeah.
I was excited when Arizona had that affair. I was like, let's do something.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's not a song, you know?
Yep.
But they walked away from the plane crash. It's like, you can't. It's like, people who actually should be this complicated, they should break up. That's hostile and haunted. There's no way that many bad things happen in one place.
It's like, so true. Like, I can't believe they don't sit there in the writer's room and say that, you know, like, do they laugh at us and go, how much longer can we feed this bullshit to people and they'll take it, you know? So.
And once the writers are like, oh God, we gotta renew another season, what the hell are you doing now?
I know, what tragedy.
Like, what's next?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's a lot.
It's so heavy. It's so heavy. And I, you know, and that's the worst part is that I stress eat while I'm watching it. It's terrible. It's terrible for your health. My heart's pounding. I'm stress eating. I'm like, this can't be right. Like, I got to give this up. I think I could speak for most people when I say I think we're all in a place where we're just looking for something simpler. You know, I mean, what a year 2015 was. I'm just like moving forward. I think everybody is just looking for a little bit of levity, things to be a little bit simpler. I don't know. Maybe there were lessons learned. You know, who knows? But it was a tough year all the way around. And you know, I feel like my focus comes with after something bad, you can kind of see what needs to be changed. And I feel like speaking for myself. Like, I have to stay away from some of the more intense and heavy stuff. I'm just not good at processing it. It sticks with me for a little bit too long. And I'm very much aware of that after this year. So I'm looking for, you know, the lightness. And that's what I feel like, that's what I get from. Like, every Sunday I'm sitting there with my cup of coffee and I'm ready to go. I mean, because I know that a new Maybelle's going to come out. I know that something good is going to be on. I'm like super thrilled about it, and I feel that way about a lot of Tello stuff. You know, like I can just watch that and feel good about it, and that's what we need. I'm saying it. I'm putting it out there. You're giving us what we need.
Yeah, you and I are on the same page because there's a lot of things that I watch a lot of TV and a lot of movies. Like I will go see a movie probably twice a week. I'll see it a week later, and I think it's so important to see what's going on and what people are working on.
Yeah,
but I think. I'm still upset that Murphy died on Homeland. I'm still waiting for him to come back. I think he died 2 weeks ago. Like, I don't want to watch it anymore. It's stressful. Like, oh my god, we're still fighting. Like, it's just, like, remember when entertainment used to be entertainment? You get excited to watch the Academy Awards because it was like a big night of stars. You could see them all the time. Like, every match would be on every detail.
Yeah.
You know, CNN.com, and all it is like news coverage. I'm like, oh, Kim Kardashian got banged.
Exactly.
It's not like, you know, I want people to be able to watch this project that I put out there, this comedy or drama, and then when they shut it off and go to sleep, they feel good. They feel
right.
Good. They're reliving what just happened. They're excited. They're going, oh, what's going to happen next? And I just, like, I don't want struggle. Life is struggle. What I'm creating right now, at least, I want my entertainment. Entertaining. And there's a comedy special that I shot last summer in Chicago for Gay Pride that I shot with Dana Goldberg. So she has I have an hour special, and that's being released on Tello this year too.
Oh, that's fantastic. Because
I haven't released a comedy special in like 2 years, so
yes.
That's coming out. It's going to be a Tello, it's going to be a Tello subscriber. And so, you know, for me, it's all about either romantic comedy, romantic drama, regular comedy, but I'm not going to write a political drama.
Right.
I don't want to do a bossy, you know, people are fighting and being framed for things they didn't do. That's not my heart.
Yeah. It's wicked hard, I swear. It's so, and like, you know, same thing with awards shows and, you know, stuff like that. Like, it is starting just to become so political, you know, you're watching it for the speeches. You're not even watching it to see, you know, what's happening, who's winning, what got, you know, the most accolades. It's about what is this person going to say when they have these 30 seconds, you know, and it's just like, oh, God, like, that's not why I want to watch it. I want to see somebody trip. I want to see somebody say something funny. I want to see the underdog, you know, win. You know, it's just, it is an ever-changing world.
We're so excited for, you know, woman from Orange is the New Black, Crazy Eyes, winning, because it was like somebody who is excited to be working, great at their job, like you said, she likes the red carpet because she actually is appreciating performing, and she's so fantastic, and she's shining, and she's not just getting an award nomination because she's going to be interviewed for so long and she's supposed to get one. And this might not be a popular thing to say, but I'm going to say it. The movie Joy with Jennifer Lawrence that came out,
yes,
is terrible. I think it is badly written, you know, I love everybody who's in it, and I even like, you know, Nicole Russell, but because it's him, and because Jennifer Lawrence, because they always make money, they get a Christmas spot in U.S. theatrical releases, which how many other filmmakers would love to have that, and it's automatically nominated for Golden Globe for Best Picture, and I'm like, you know, I'm calling bullshit, I'm saying this is not right, this is just a an insider circle jerk of Hollywood saying this is what they're supposed to get. And let's have a higher standard. I think so many people out there, so many filmmakers that are doing beautiful, amazing projects, and we're giving the same coverage to the same people. And the same thing happens in the music industry. And I'm just saying, like, let's get back to good entertainment, you know? But the emperor has no clothes. No one wants to say that this guy's naked. Well, he's naked, and I'm not going to praise him for having an amazing outfit. I want to watch content that's entertaining, and not just because someone told me that this celebrity's in it and I should like it.
It's so true. It's so true. You know, I was scrolling through my Twitter the other day, and I saw where Robert Stigwood passed away. And I was like, oh, I know. Who's that? And then it dawned on me, like, that was the guy that produced Saturday Night Fever. And it just took me, like, right back to the first time I ever saw that, sitting in a theater with my friends, big bucket of popcorn, thoroughly entertained. And walking out of there and thinking it was, like, the greatest movie ever made. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Good movie.
Yeah, but it's just, like, I don't walk out of the theater ever feeling like that anymore.
No. And I think that also, like, we know too much behind the scenes stuff, so there's some magic and mystery of it is gone. Now we're looking at things more like, oh, is that a crane shot? Or, oh,
yeah. One long tape.
That we're not,
right.
Yeah, we're right. Not seeing Batman. We're seeing J-Law, and it's like, no, I just want to fall into a film or a series and just, like, be engrossed in the characters.
Yeah.
You know, that's so important to me when I'm watching. I mean, life is short, and supposedly every hour of television you watch, 22 minutes are taken off your life.
I believe that.
So I'm trying, there was a study at a university in Australia, but that's what it was stating, that was every hour, 22 minutes, and it's like, well, then I want to be really specific about what I'm watching. I want to be good, if I'm going to die for it.
Right? Oh, my God. Well, if that's the case, you know what? I'll shave a couple of minutes off my life to be able to watch the stuff that you're putting out there. I'm okay with that.
Oh, thank you.
Well, Bridget, I feel like I've kept you, like, your entire morning, so I totally, totally appreciate you taking time out and talking with us. You know we love, love, love you, and we are looking forward to it. And you, personally, if there's anything that you need as you're taking on this project of a feature film, please do not hesitate to ask.
You are the sweetest. Thank you so much. And when I have the script that we're about to shoot, when I get the shooting script, I will send it to you first if you want to read it. I know what we're doing.
I most definitely will take you up on that. For sure. All right, listen, give hugs to your wife, kisses to the dogs, and a little smooch for that Yoko Ono.
Oh, give your cat my best, please.
I will. As soon as he's done licking his ass, I totally will.
Thank you.
Take care, Bridge. A fantastic chat with Bridget McManus. You can catch her now in the web series Maybell at telofilms.com. I want to thank you guys for hanging in there and listening to these incredible interviews that I've been fortunate enough to score. We'll be back with new shows, new Lesbian Lounge, all new things coming at you in 2016. Have a fantastic rest of the month. Take care. Bye-bye now. I'm not too busy, but no.